Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Mix Essentials. I think Martin said we're going to talk about Windows 17. We're actually going to talk about Windows 7, not 17. My name is Stefan Hoefhagels. I'm a designer on the Windows team, and I'm really representing the very talented team that designed the Windows 7 desktop experience. I wanted to give you guys a heads up, because even though Mix Essentials sort of has a tradition of being a web conference, I'm actually not going to talk about web stuff. We are going to talk about the Windows desktop experience. And what is the Windows desktop experience? Well, you're looking at it. Right? And the taskbar is a very big part of it. That's actually the bar at the bottom of the screen. You've got the start menu as well, a very important piece. But also the windows themselves and the way you actually manipulate the windows and the way you actually arrange them on the screen. So you're looking at the Windows Vista desktop experience here, and this is how we evolved it for Windows 7. And one of the first things you'll notice is that we tweaked the taskbar quite a bit. We evolved it quite a bit. And that's how to really touch that piece of UI. Just out of interest, how many of you are either running Windows 7, the beta, or the release candidate, or have run it in the past? All right, that's a pretty good number, great. So how did we get from Windows Vista to Windows 7? So what you're going to hear is basically the evolution of the design. And I'm going to share with you some of the areas of improvement that we identified for Windows Vista, some of the goals that we came up with for the Windows 7 desktop experience, and most interestingly, you'll see a bunch of sketches and a bunch of prototypes that we did along the way as we were designing this this product. And you know, it's sort of a behind-the-scenes look that we're going to get, you know, the Microsoft design process. And we don't normally share these kind of things too broadly normally, so it should be pretty interesting for you to see this. Along the way, I'll touch on a lot of the challenges that we encountered along the way. I'll touch on a lot of the solutions that we came up with. And most interestingly, I will also share with you the lessons that we learned as we were designing this product. And I hope you will be able to apply some of those lessons in your design projects as well. Because whether we're talking about web design or client design, in the end, we're all trying to do the same thing, which is basically designing interactive experiences. So I'll do all this through telling some stories, and hopefully it should be fun. But before we look forward, I always think it makes sense to actually look back and see how we got where we are today. And one of the really interesting things of working on Windows is that it is actually very old. Windows is pretty old. It's actually from 1985. And just to give you some context, this is what we went to see in the movies in 1985. And this is not Back to the Future 2, this is not even Back to the Future 3, that was actually the first Back to the Future. And what did we all watch on TV? The Cosby Show. And what did we all listen to in 1985? By 2 years. And for us historians in the audience, it even predates the Acorn Arthur OS by 2 years as well. So those large icons at the bottom of the screen that we had in Windows 1 were arguably the industry's first stab at a taskbar-like UI. So let's fast forward to 1990. And this is the first familiar version of Windows, Windows 3. Interestingly, you can see that we sort of went away from the taskbar concept in Windows 3. All of a sudden, Windows had minimized to the desktop. Windows 95, of course, this is the first time where we really introduced the taskbar like we know it today. You can see the start button on the left. You can see sort of the task band in the middle that allows you to switch through your windows. And on the right, there's an area that we call the system tray that gives you your notifications. And I treat it a little bit because this screenshot is actually from 1997 and has IE4 with desktop extensions installed. And what that does, it gave us the ability to add quick launch, and it basically gives you one click access to launch your favorite programs. It's some little icons right next to the start button. This is our good friend, Windows XP. We're all very familiar with it, I'm sure. Many of you, I'm sure, are still running it. Many changes, of course, that we did in Windows XP, and one of the biggest ones, or one of the interesting ones that I actually want to call out, is the most frequently used list in the start menu, and it allows you to launch your programs even faster. And this is where we are today, Windows Vista. Many changes across the board, of course, as well. One of them that I want to call out is the search box in the start menu, and we added that as yet another way to make launching programs much easier. So, Windows Vista is what we had at the beginning of the design process. And what were some of the areas for improvement that we saw in Vista that we might want to address from Windows 7 in terms of the desktop experience? Well, let's look at some of it. Did any of you guys read the sticky note? How many Outlook icons are there on this picture? Anyone want to guess? Anyone want to count them? How many? Six, I'm hearing. No, it's not six. Not seven. Eight, yes. There's a grand total of 8 Outlook icons just on this desktop. And there's quite a few. And actually, most of them are meant to launch Outlook. And so we're sort of basically doing the same thing. But let's look at one interesting set here. Let's look at these guys. We've got, let's see what they do. So we've got an Outlook icon on the left in the quick launch. And what it does, it launches Outlook. And when Outlook is already running, it switches to Outlook, because Outlook is a single instance application. And of course, the button right next to it, it switches to Outlook as well. And then you've got not one, but you've got 2 icons in the sys tray trying to tell me stuff. One is trying to tell me stuff about how many emails, or if I have new emails or not, and the other one is trying to tell me stuff about my email connection to the Exchange server. And then in this picture, I installed a gadget as well, and it's trying to tell me about my upcoming appointments. Now, I don't want to pick on Outlook necessarily, but a sophisticated application like Outlook that you can launch and you can switch to, and that also can provide you with status and notifications, is spread out all over the user's desktop. Right? It's represented in so many different places. Is that really what we want? Well, maybe not. We're looking at a slide that our planning team put together here. And we were interested in how people would use their desktops, actually in real life, and how they arranged items on their desktop. And we looked at desktops of 300 respondents in this particular study, and you're looking at a sample of them. And one thing that we noticed, when you look at the slide, there's a lot going on. Right? Pretty busy, pretty noisy. Let's actually look at one of these taskbars in detail. And what's wrong with this picture? Everything overflows. Look at that. Nothing fits. We've got, on the left, we've got quick launch. And it overflows with a little menu there, indicated by the chevron, which means quick launch, not that quick after all, when I have to launch stuff, because I have to bring up a menu first. We've got a button right next to it, and the text doesn't fit on the button, so it's a dot, dot, dot. And then the 2 buttons right next to that, we've got dot, 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 meaning that the text doesn't fit on the button. And then we've got the arrows, meaning that the buttons don't fit on the bar. So there's even more buttons there, and they probably have text on it, and also doesn't fit. Then we've got, all the way on the right, we have a lot of sys tray icons already. But apparently, there's even more, as indicated by the chevron. So it just, overall, it just feels very cramped, like we're really just trying to cram a lot of stuff in a very space-constrained UI. Let's look at this scenario. All right, this is kind of a crazy setup. We've got a few windows open, a few taskbar buttons there. And imagine I want to switch to the Notepad document I was working on. And which is the right one? Well, I don't know. Based on the information I'm seeing here, I basically have a 50% chance of picking the right window. And maybe it would be interesting to sort of increase those odds. Another thing that we know that is actually really popular on the desktop is drag and drop. Right? Many people like to copy files between windows using drag and drop. Now, when you imagine, when you think back of your drag and drop experience, you realize it's sort of a hassle. Right? You've got to have 2 windows, you need 1 window, you need to position in a way that you can grab all your files, then you need another window, right? but the first window can't be too big because the other window still has to be enough visible that it can be a drop target. And you kind of have to raise these things, you have to kind of size them the right way. There's just a lot of mouse acrobatics going on and a lot of mouse language. Right? Maybe that could be easier. So reviewing, what were the areas of improvement that we saw in Windows Vista? App functionality is scattered. Sophisticated applications like Outlook are spread out all over the user's desktop. There's too much noise, too much stuff going on in that taskbar. Switching windows can be error-prone. You know, wouldn't it be great if you could switch to your windows with a little bit more confidence? And arranging windows often tries to cause acrobatics. And the way we think about the desktop experience is not as a destination, necessarily. We think of it more as something that you pass through to get to your destination. So the desktop experience would be all about getting you to the document that you just were working on, or maybe to the website that you want to get to. And what we wanted to do is basically put all the lights on green and get you to your destination as fast, as efficient, and as smooth as possible, and just remove as many of those red lights as possible. And, you know, don't get me wrong, we didn't think the Vista desktop experience necessarily was horribly broken, right? We think what we wanted to do in Windows 7 is really just focus on the little things and really evolve an already good system that we had in Windows Vista. So how do we articulate some of our goals? Well, first one, things you use all your time at your fingertips. You know, wouldn't it be great if you could get to your destination as fast and as smooth as possible? Managing your windows with confidence. Being able to switch to the right window and being able to position windows very, very easily. You are in control. We wanted the desktop to be about you. And we wanted you to be in control of the icons that show up and all of the noise that occurs. You should be in charge of that surface. And clean and lightweight. The last one is about our visual and animation language. And it's all about, we want our visual and animations to sort of reflect the speed and the efficiency that we're trying to design in the overall experience. So what I'd like to do now, actually, is for those of you who are not familiar with it, I'll give you a little demo of the Windows 7 desktop experience. So one of the first things that you'll notice, of course, when you see the new Windows 7 desktop experience is the redesigned taskbar. And what we did is we have larger icons, and it makes it much easier to recognize, and also it makes it much easier to click. Now, also these icons at the bottom of the bar, they basically represent all the programs that I use all the time. And it's very easy for me to add icons that I use all the time to this bar. For instance, if I want to add Word, I can just go here to the start menu, grab Word, drag it to the taskbar, and it shows up on the taskbar. Now, one of the interesting things that we saw in our usability studies again and again, and that we see externally quite a bit as well, is that people like to be in charge of the order of the buttons in their taskbar. We actually know that there's people out there that like to have Outlook always be the leftmost button, and to the extent even that people would close windows if Outlook somehow ended up maybe not exactly on the left, they would close all the windows until Outlook shows up on the left, and that would make people happy. So now finally in Windows 7, we actually allow you just to reorder the taskbar and put, you know, your application exactly where you want it. So let's see how this thing works. So just like in Vista, I can click an icon to launch it. So in this case, I'm launching Notepad. And one interesting thing that you'll notice is that instead of spawning a new button, sort of on the right, Notepad opens up in place. And that's because we wanted you to have one place to go for an application to launch and to switch and do all your things that are associated with that application. When I click it again, the window minimizes, just like in Vista. We give you a thumbnail, just like in Vista as well, to help you find the right window. Another interesting thing that we realized in Vista is that people really like the thumbnails. Actually, they like it so much that again and again, what we would see is that people would try to click on it, and then poof, the thumbnail would disappear. In Vista, you can't click the thumbnail, it will just disappear on your mouse. So finally, in Windows 7, we allow you to click the thumbnail. It's a nice big click target and allows you to switch to the right window. So let's open a couple more windows here. So what you notice is that I opened two windows, but there's only one button on the taskbar. Around Explorer. So again, all my windows open up in the same place to give me just one place to go for that particular application. And now, when I move my mouse to this button that's associated with these windows, instead of seeing one thumbnail, I see two windows side by side, just making it really easy for me to see what is the right window, because I can compare right there, side by side. And if this is enough information for you to switch to the right window, great. Right? You can go to the thumbnail and click on it. But we wanted to do better than that, so we introduced a feature called Arrow Peak. When I move my mouse into one of these thumbnails, what happens is all of the windows on my desktop are going to go transparent, and I'm getting a real full-size preview of exactly the window that I want to switch to. Now, I haven't clicked yet. Right? I'm only just moving my mouse along on the desktop experience. If I'm going to see what this window is, I just simply move in here. Right? And then with 100% confidence, I can really know when I'm switching to the right window. This is only when I click. Let's look at IE. You know, web browsing is one of the most popular activities on Windows. And we know tabs are very popular and offered by all the modern browsers today. So let's open the tab. So what we also know is that oftentimes people don't know if a website is contained in a window or in a tab. Right? You might know that you have a website open, but you just don't remember. Was it a window? Was it a tab? I don't know. So what we did in Windows 7, we said, instead of just only showing tabs or windows on the tabs bar, we're going to show tabs as well. And again, the tabs bar becomes the one place to go for me to just find all of my websites that I'm looking for, whether they be windows or whether they be tabs. So you'll notice, by the way, that we invested quite heavily also in sort of the elegance of the experience. As I'm moving around here, I'm seeing these thumbnails appear. They sort of move in a very elegant way. When I scrub the bar, you can see them sort of follow me around and sort of morph and really provide a very smooth experience overall. When I'm trying to get an Arrow Peak preview, you see this nice crossface. It's just, we spend a lot of time just refining those details and providing a very smooth experience. You'll notice some glows as well here as I move them along the bottom of the screen. And these glows actually reflect the color of the icons. This is something that we call color hot track. And it's just a little touch for us to say that the desktop is all about the icons and it's not about us. So I talked a little bit about launching and switching. But wouldn't it be great if instead of opening blank windows, we could actually provide you, we could actually get you to your destination right then and there. Maybe the document that you wanted to get to, or maybe the website that you wanted to get to instead of the homepage. So for that, we introduced a feature that we call the jump lists. So when I right-click on any of these icons, a menu appears, and we call the jump list. And what it does, it keeps track of the most frequently and most recent used websites, in this case, that I use, so I can just in one click directly go to that website versus having to open the window first and then track down that website. So you'll notice, for instance, that Word, it's not even running, but I can right-click on it, and it just allows me to get back to the documents I was just working on in one single click. Let's open up, let's look at some of the Explorer windows right here. So remember how I showed you that drag and drop scenario in Windows Vista, and that's sort of a hassle, with all the mouse acrobatics and mouse mileage? Well, for that we introduced a feature called Arrow Snap. So let's imagine I want to drag these pictures into the window behind it. What I do in Windows Vista, I simply grab the window, I move it to the right, I put it there, grab this window, move it to the left, I put it there, and then in two simple, easy motions, you see I've got these nice side-by-side windows to make it really easy for me to drag and drop files from window to window. Another thing, once I'm done with that, I simply pull back the windows, and I'm back as they were before. Now, throughout this demo, we opened quite a few windows, and sometimes you'll find yourselves with sort of messy, a lot of windows, a lot of noise going on your desktop. Wouldn't it be great if you could sort of clean that up and focus on one particular window? And wouldn't it be great if you could simply just grab a window, maybe shake it, and it would minimize all the other windows? Well, we call that Arrow Shake. So I simply grab the window, shake it, and it gets rid of all the clutter for me. If I want my windows back, I grab it again, shake it, and it puts all my windows back into place. So we call that one Arrow Shake. So let's talk about our design process. How did we get from Windows 1, Windows 3, Windows 95, XP, Vista, all the way to where we are today with Windows 7? What I'm going to do is I'm going to show you guys a couple of case studies with a lot of design iterations, a lot of challenges, solutions, and lessons learned. But before that, I'm going to give you guys sort of a little bit of context and give you guys a sense of the timeline and the scale of the design process of Windows. So we started in early 2007, so this process is it's about 2 years because we released our beta in early 2009. And we actually released our release candidate earlier this month in May. So about a two-year process gives you a sense of the timeline. How many people work on Windows? Well, when we're talking about an area like the taskbar, the core team that works on that is actually about a dozen people. And it's a multidisciplinary team. So we have design represented, we have user research represented, but we have developers, of course, as well. We have testers, and we have program managers. And when we're talking about an area sort of like the desktop experience overall, it's probably around 30 people on the core team that work on that. So it gives you a sense of the timeline and sort of the size of the team. But how many explorations do we do? Well, we do quite a few, and we do quite a few in low fidelity. So here you're looking at one of the first brainstorms around the look and feel, the visual and animation language of the taskbar. And you can see there's some crazy stuff here, right? Like these are basically scanned in post-its from that brainstorm. And we're drawing some shapes, and we're drawing some flowers, and we're trying to explore how to express certain emotions. And you've got a sapphire there, there's crazy stuff on this slide, right? And the interesting thing is, this is not just the design team going crazy. This is a multidisciplinary brainstorm. So these sketches were made by design, of course, but they were made by user research as well, by development, by test, by program management, all the disciplines that were actually in that brainstorm. So it was a very collaborative process. These are some more sketches around functional ideas. And this is just a very small sample of them. We actually did about 400 of these little fundamental sketches. And these are actually some of the first sketches that exist of Windows 7. For instance, the side-by-side thumbnails that I showed you guys earlier, on the upper middle, you see the very first sketch of that idea of side-by-side thumbnails. Another interesting thing that you'll note is sort of towards the middle and the lower left, some of the sketches are animated, right? And that's, for us, to make sure that even in these early stages, we're considering the transitions between states in our experiences. Now, we did a lot of sketching, of course, and we sketched pretty much on any surface that was available. We sketched on our whiteboards, and all of those sketches are lost, actually. So we didn't take any pictures. We sketched on our notepads, and so on and so forth. But we did a lot of high fidelity mockups, of course, as well. We did quite a few of them where we explored different layouts of controls, and also different types of user flows. Small sample of the amount of work that we did. So with this volume of work and with a fair amount of people working on this product and with us actually encouraging multiple fingerprints on the design, how do we make sure that we still deliver a design with focus? Well, one very important tool for us is UX principles. And UX principles allow us to make sure that our entire team and throughout the entire volume of exploration stays focused. So what are our principles? Well, the way we think about it is our goals are sort of that mountaintop. That's where we want to get, right? And what the principles do is basically they allow us to make sure that we sort of find an efficient path to get to that goal that we're trying to get to. They sort of prevent us from taking the wrong turns, maybe getting lost in those woods, and they can keep us on the right track. So what are the principles that we have in the seminal? Well, here they are. And I'm not gonna talk about all of these right now. I am gonna touch on some of these actually in case studies that I'm gonna show you later. Well, so actually the reason is these are our principles, but I think it's important for each project to have principles, but they don't necessarily have to be these principles. Right? It depends on the culture of the team, it depends on the design problem, it depends on the specific context. But the important thing is to have principles. And the important thing is actually that the entire organization buys into these principles. So one way that we do that is we make sure we message them very, very broadly and consistently. So we pin them out on a little sheet, for instance, and people can put them in their office, right? And they're always just a glance away on that core board. And then always sort of in the periphery so people can refer back to it. And some people's offices, maybe not that organized, right? Maybe kids' drawings are a little bit more important than the principles, but when I ask these guys to pull up the principles, they're able to find it, right? Nonetheless, so very important that the entire organization is aware of these principles. Another way that we prevent us from sort of designing in the dark is user data. So in Windows Vista, you can actually voluntarily opt in to share data around your computer usage with Microsoft. And this is completely anonymous, and it's completely voluntary, and it's very useful for us. So in Windows Vista, we had about 11 million people sign up for that, and they provide us with data around their sessions. And this way, you've collected data from more than close to actually 400 million sessions. And this represents 200 countries and regions around the world. And what this does is it gives us a sense on how the product is used in the real world, and it sets some boundaries around the design space. And one thing that we, for instance, were interested in for the desktop experience is how many windows people have opened, right? Wouldn't that be nice to know? Well, you're looking at it, right? You can see from this graph, we have 90% of sessions have between 0 and 14 windows open. So that's good information for us to know. And what else, another interesting thing that you can see from this graph is that almost nobody has more than 25 windows open. And that's good for us to know too, because it really sets the boundaries around the design space. Now, this graph is the external graph, actually. So we actually track data externally, of course, but we track internal data, internal Microsoft data as well. And sometimes those data points can be a little bit different. And actually seeing some of those differences between external and internal data has sort of confirmed a suspicion that I had for a very long time. And that is that people who work at Microsoft are sort of weird. Really. Let me show you why. These are our external window usage, the blue bars. And this is the Microsoft window usage. And you can see within Microsoft, there's more than 15% that have more than 25 windows open. And in the real world, that's less than 0.5%. So 25 windows open within Microsoft, you walk into somebody's office, you have a big chance you're going to find somebody with 25 more windows open. And you're not ever going to find it in the real world. Another thing you see is that our peak is just a little later. It's at 10 to 14 instead of 6 to 9. And this really, this looking at this data for us, is very, very useful because it forces us to make sure that we understand how we are different from the users out there, the almost 1 billion users out there that are using Windows. And it makes sure that we are optimizing for those blue graphs and not the yellow graph, which is the world that we experience every day working for Microsoft. So very eye-opening for us. So with that, let's look at some of the case studies of some of the design iterations that we did and some of the challenges that we had, some of the solutions that we came up with, and some of the lessons that we learned. I have four of them for you. First one is called bat signal, and it's all about window switching. The second one we call the nub, and it's all about showing jump lists. We've got color object, our personality, and we've got arrow shake, which is of course about shaking windows. Let's start with bat signal. So remember our desktop experience goals? Well, this one is all about managing your windows with confidence and allowing you to switch to the right window quickly and without mistakes. And the reason why we're so interested, by the way, in window switching is that we know from our data that a third of our users actually switch windows more than 100 times in one particular day. So it's a very frequent experience for many of our users. Actually, one-fifth of our users switches Windows more than 150 times a day. So any kind of efficiency that we can achieve in Windows switching, because it's such a frequent activity for everybody, it just saves the world a lot of productivity, especially if you multiply by a billion users that do 100 Windows switches a day. So let's look at the taskbar. You know, the taskbar is a pretty simple piece of UI when you think about it. Basically, it's a remote control that allows you to get back to your Windows. You know, Windows, it can get covered up, it can get obscured, it gets minimized, get hidden. And what the taskbar does, it always allows you a top-level button to get back to the window that you're looking for. And to make sure you pick the right window, it also sends up some clues. You know, in this picture here, you can see there's an icon on the top level, and there's a little bit of text. There's a thumbnail that shows us some information. There's some more text actually over the thumbnail as well. And there's some cues that we are currently not using in the taskbar, such as the actual window size and position on the screen. And what we were interested in is basically seeing if we could somehow redesign some of these cues to make sure that this scenario, where you're trying to find the right window, make sure that you can actually, with 100% confidence, pick the right window. We wanted to increase those odds from 50% here to 100%. And the first try that we did is called the thumbnail taskbar. And this is a very early prototype from late 2006. It was done by one of our developers. And this is it. So this is actually real code that's running on Windows Vista. And what we did here is, we knew that the people in Vista loved the thumbnails, so we said, well, why don't we just put the thumbnails on the top level? Alright? Wouldn't that be nice? And you can see thumbnails all the time. Well, it turned out that maybe sounded nice, but when we implemented it, we realized because the thumbnails are so small, they become pretty meaningless. They all turn into these white rectangles. And they really don't give you enough information to pick the right window. So we had to get back to the drawing board. And our second prototype was actually Betsy. And this is a prototype that we did in February 2007. And let me show you this prototype. This is another real code prototype that was done by one of our developers. And as you can see, it's real code running on Windows Vista. Because there, you can see the prototype running right here with a little Batman icon. And our thought here for this prototype was, what if we don't have thumbnails? What if, when I move my mouse to the taskbar, we give you a bat signal? We simply link the real window to that particular taskbar button. I haven't clicked, mind you, I'm just moving my mouse over a taskbar button. And you know, it gives me really good information about that window, right? And you'll notice that I have the two notepad windows to the right of this button. So let's see what's actually in them. Move my mouse to the right, hover over it, and you see, oh great. Well, that's what the window is. Well, it's sort of small and up on the right. It's got some Latin in it. And it has a capital L. Great. Let's move to this other notepad. It looks the same on top level. Oh, wow, it's actually a completely different position, a little bit bigger. It also has some Latin in it, but it has a lowercase L. Well, I know that I actually want to switch to the notepad document that has the uppercase L, so I can move back here. Now I'm 100% sure that this is the right window. I click it. And then just switch with 100% confidence to the right window. Now, we were pretty happy with this prototype. We thought it was pretty cool. So we actually rolled it out in the entire Windows organization. And interestingly, we got some very interesting feedback. So people were running this prototype in their day-to-day work as they were just going along their day. And we realized that oftentimes people are not aware necessarily of where their cursor is on the screen. So you might be typing something, typing an email or a document, and your mouse might actually end up at the bottom of the screen. And it's actually really easy for your mouse to end up on the bottom of the screen because it's such a large surface. So and what would happen is you would be typing along, and then boom, the bat signal would kick in. And you'd be like, crap, what just happened? My entire screen went dark, this weird light effect appeared, and I was just trying to type my email, right? And that just sucked. So we found, by using this prototype ourselves, that the full-size window preview is really great. There's nothing better than it if I'm trying to switch to the window. Right? If I'm trying to accomplish that task, it's awesome. If I'm not trying to accomplish that task, it sucks. It's very jarring, screen going dark, and it's very distracting from my task that I was trying to accomplish. So we were very worried about accidental triggering this prototype, and we had to think about this some more. So what we came up with is, of course, in the end, we came up with AeroPeak, and let me again show you how this is how this works in our current build. So I've got a similar setup as with the bat signal, and I've got my two notepad documents down here. So what happens when I move over these notepad documents? I get side-by-side thumbnails. Great. Sometimes it gives me enough information for switching to the right window, sometimes not. Here, maybe if I look closely, I could really see some text in there, but you know, oftentimes these thumbnails are just a little bit too small. So I move my mouse into the thumbnails, and this is when we give you AeroPeak, the full size, full window preview in the right position and with the right content. So again, I can see there's Latin in this one has the capital L. I move to this one here, I get AeroPeak preview of the other notepad window. It also has Latin in it, it has a lowercase L. The one in the uppercase L, of course. I click and I switch. So we evolved bat signal into AeroPeak. What we did is we basically moved the trigger away from the top level, and so that the accidental trigger never occurs. In the AeroPeak design, we know when we're giving you AeroPeak that you are trying to switch to a window. So no more jarring experiences. You know, when you really think about it, basically what we did is we provided a progressive disclosure of information of the taskbar. So we give you icons on the top level. Then, if you need more information, we give you thumbnails and text on the second level when there's enough space to show those at a good size. And if you want to switch them, it's great, but if you need more information, we give you AeroPeak after that, the full-size preview that allows you to switch through your window with 100% confidence. So what are some of the lessons that we learned by doing this this design exercise? Well, the first one is start small. You know, I'm talking to you guys about switching to Windows, right? It's only a very, very small bit of the entire Windows experience. And starting small just allows you to fully understand a problem and really do some interesting explorations around it. Second one is prototyping early in real code. You know, we have some really good insights by actually building these prototypes early in the cycle, early 2007, and experiencing them ourselves. And it opened up some unexpected insights. Iteration. You know, we didn't get it right the first time. We actually didn't get it right the second time. We only got it right the third time. And really allowing for time for iteration in your process makes your final result just much, much better. So that's a bad signal. Let's look at our second prototype. This one is called the Nub. This one is all about jump lists. This little menu is a show you that allow you to get to your destination easily. And we have designed these jump lists, and we were pretty happy with them. And we needed a way for the user to invoke the jump lists. And we did what we normally do, so we designed a little widget. And we call that little widget the Nub. You know, it's a little split button that you see there, the arrow. And, you know, we spent some time on it, you know, thinking about it, you know, maybe a little nub should be sort of there on the right, or maybe it should be a little bit more up here, sort of the Mickey Mouse thing, maybe it should be sort of here. You know, we spent some time really thinking about it, this is where we ended up. Right? You can see, you know, we put some thought in. You can see, for instance, the nub, the little split button, is smaller than the main window button, because we really think the taskbar is all about Windows switching. That's the most important thing of the taskbar. And even though we're pretty happy with these jump lists and we think they're pretty important, they're clearly secondary, so we made that control a little bit smaller. Another thing that we did is we made sure that that control only shows up for one button at a time. So we're not continuously spamming it with all these little triangles all the time. So, you know, we're pretty happy with this. We spent some time thinking through, and, you know, we felt pretty good about it. And that is until we rolled it out in longitudinal usability. So as part of the desktop experience, we actually had 63 families use our prototypes early in the cycle for several months at a time in our homes. So we would actually go to these people's homes, install our prototypes on their computers, and we would come back and interview them, and we would collect some data, and we got some really interesting insights. And one of the recurring themes that we found in our longitudinal usability is, as articulated by one of our users, she said, Sometimes the tanks were hot because with a nub would irritate me. Sometimes when I hit them, it opened a side arrow instead. So what this user is saying is that the nub is getting in the way of Windows switching. And many users agreed with her. And that's of course not good, because we were trying to design the best Windows switcher, you know, that we could design. And these little nubs were really getting in the way of that task. So that sucked. Right? Another thing that we heard is, in this design, we actually didn't just have job lists. We had right-click menus as well on all these buttons. And we could, on one button, you could have three different menus. Job lists and context menus. And people are like, what the hell? I don't get it. Why is there three menus on there? There's just, I don't understand why some of the commands show up in some place and they don't show up in the other place. It's just way too complicated. So, that kind of sucked, because it was September 2008, and you know, we had to release our beta in early 2009. So we were pretty far along in the process. And we hadn't really expected to hear this much feedback on the nub and the jump lists. So we're like, you know, what are we going to do? We don't know what to do. What should we do? You know, this new feedback. What are we going to do? Well, luckily, we glanced at our org boards, and we were reminded by our UX principles. And in particular, we were reminded by one of them. This one right here. Solve distractions, not discoverability. So we had designed a nub to solve discoverability of the jump list. It was a little widget, a little arrow, that helped you understand, oh, there was something there. When you click it, oh, great, it's a jump list. We were trying to solve this discoverability issue. But in the end, this turned out to be a distraction. It was getting in the way of day-to-day usage of that piece of UI. So, you know, we realized this is where we had gone wrong. And the good thing is that the usability study not only provided us sort of with the negative feedback and provided us with a problem, but it also provided us with a clue to the solution. So when we looked at all the longitudinal usability study, we found that 100% of the families, at one time or another, actually right-clicked on the taskbar. And this was an important insight, because the general knowledge, actually, that is still pretty widely shared, is that right-clicking is sort of an advanced user action. Right? And we saw from this longitudinal usability study, that's not. Everybody right-clicked at one point or another. So we thought, maybe we can put the jump lists on right-click. And that was a big discussion, because we had invested a lot of dev time into our jump lists. We, you know, it's not an easy design to get right, because you've got to keep track of all the documents that people are opening, the documents that people are saving, the websites that people are visiting. There's this whole dev architecture that underlies the jump lists. And it was a big piece of work. And now all of a sudden we're proposing to put it on right-click, right? All of this work we're going to put on right-click, and people were pretty hesitant about that. And, you know, we would have never been able to do that unless, you know, we could only do it because we had this data from the longitudinal usability study. And we could confidently say, well, everybody is going to right-click at some point. So they will find the jump list. Our work is not going to get lost, and people will find the jump list, and they will find the value. So, invaluable insights from a longitudinal usability study. And this is, of course, how we ended up designing it in final build. Basically, you right-click on the icon. There is no more three different menus. Basically, there's actually one, pretty much one menu. It differs slightly depending on the state of the button. And it always shows you the jump list. Much simpler. So what's the lesson that we learned? Try it, longitudinal usability. You have time in your design process. Longitudinal usability is a great addition to regular usability studies that people might come in the lab and use your design for maybe a couple of hours. It gives some really interesting insights on long-term usage and can be very, very helpful in decision-making. So let's go to our third case study, called a HopTrack. Remember our goals? This one is about this one. It's about the visual animation language of the taskbar. And I told you guys earlier that we wanted our visuals and animations to sort of reflect the speed and efficiency of the experience that we were designing. But that's not all. We were inspired by some other things as well. We were inspired by light. You can see in some of these images. We were inspired by glass. You know, of course, glass is a very big part of the Windows aesthetic. And in particular, we were inspired by the way light interacts with glass. And by the way, it can create these interesting shadows and these interesting highlights. And we kind of have one other thought as well. So we really believe that the desktop experience should not be about us. It should actually be about you. And it should be about how it should be about your personality. And it should be about how you personalize your desktop. And it should be about the activities that you do all the time. And it should really be about your applications, the things that you use all the time. We thought of ourselves more as sort of like a stage, right, on which you and your applications can really shine. Now, one sort of complete articulation of that thought is this prototype that we did early on. This one is called the Color Transfer Buttons. It's from April 2007. What we did here is kind of a little bit hard to see, is that each of these buttons that you see here sort of are tinted to match the color of their icon. So you can see Outlook is a little bit red, and Excel next to it is a little bit green, and then the little folder there, the Windows Explorer, is yellow. And that was our way to sort of celebrate the icons. And sort of an interesting thought, an interesting idea, but it's actually pretty hard to pull it off and get it right, because as soon as we would bump up these colors quite a bit, they become very visible, but you also get this rainbow taskbar, and it's not exactly the prettiest thing. And if we tone back the colors quite a bit, you know, you almost can't really see it. And you know, we really thought, what's the point? So an interesting thought there, but we needed basically to do some more sketching. And we're now at early 2008, showing three sketches. And again, we did about 400 of these. On the left, you can see we're interested in how light interacts with glass, and how maybe light can interact with the edges of the glass differently than the center of the glass. And the middle one was one of our crazy thoughts, where we had an idea of chi. And we thought, well, maybe the taskbar is sort of this static thing, but then when the user uses it, maybe they bring energy into the taskbar. And as they use the taskbar, maybe the energy follows them around from one control to the next, and it flows throughout that experience. And of course, there can only ever be one piece of energy that morphs and transforms as you use it. And then the sketch to the right of this kind of builds on that color taskbar button idea, where you've got these colorful icons, but instead of the buttons being colored all the time, they show a little glow that is colored only when my mouse moves over it, and it sort of solves that rainbow taskbar effect. So, you know, we thought we had some pretty cool ideas here and decided to prototype these up. We actually did, as part of the look and feel explorations, we did about 90 prototypes of the visual animation language, 90, and we did about 900 mock-ups, high-res mock-ups, just to explore the visuals. So of those 90 prototypes, I'm going to show you two. This is the first one, called the Color Object, February 2008. In this prototype, you can see, so there's a desktop, there's a taskbar, and when I move my mouse over these icons here, you can see a little light effect. Now, this is pretty reminiscent of Vista, and we already had that there, and you can see there's pretty subdued, there's just a little bit of light that happens. Now, when I move my mouse in one of the applications that's running, as indicated by those squares, those glass sheets, something else happens. Right. You see a couple of things. So there's more light, meaning that these applications are running, so they're sort of in a higher energy state. You know, we try to come up with these stories to sort of explain the narrative of our designs. And you can see, of course, see that the color of this glow matches exactly the icons. We're celebrating the icons. And another thing you see is the light sort of follows me around, and it actually interacts with the light in an interesting way. Let me zoom in and kind of show you what I mean. So you can see when I move my mouse in, you can see how the light sort of curves along the edges. Right? And it interacts with the edges. It's very differently than it does with the center. And this is our way of sort of exploring that idea to get some realism of how light actually interacts with glass specifically. You see the light sort of linger a little bit as I move out. You know, so we're pretty happy with this, and we're putting in usability. And this is what we got.
Funny. Ooh, it changes color. that spot. I like that.
So, you know, we're talking about a task bar, a pretty utilitarian piece of UI. We've got people in usability actually smiling and giggling, so, you know, we're pretty happy. That's what we're trying to do, right? We wanted to get this emotional connection. So we're like, great, awesome. You know, we think it's a good idea. Let's explore a little bit further. So we did another prototype. So far you've seen a couple of different types of prototypes. I showed you the bat signal, and that was a real code prototype that allowed us to really experience the interactions firsthand. The prototype you just saw was sort of a proof of concept. We're just exploring certain visuals and animation concepts. And the prototype you're going to see next is a type of prototype that we might do later on in the cycle, where we're exploring different settings and different details around a certain design. This one is from June 2008. Now, as you can see, similar to the previous prototype, you've got the taskbar at the bottom, but this time we're more interested in the parameters of the globe, the specific details of that globe. So, let me change the wallpaper real quick. Let me zoom in a little bit. You can see, you know, some sort of gradient map characteristics of that globe. And you can see some boxes here as well, some parameters. So the default settings, pretty similar to what I just showed you, right? The only difference is here, of course, we still have the nub at this time. But the light effect is pretty similar. Now, you know, maybe we would want to tweak some settings. So the way the light interacts with the edges, maybe we want that a little bit stronger. So we change the refraction factor. So now we've got, you know, those edges really light up a lot more, right? All sort of interesting. Maybe, you know, the light is a lot more light. Maybe we want it in the center. So we change this value here. Well, sort of interesting, but now it sort of feels like I'm just finding a flashlight in this little piece of light. Maybe not exactly what we want. Maybe we want the light to be more diffuse. So let me change those numbers here. And I'm going to change refraction to back to 2. And maybe I'll bottom the line completely. And this one again. And this is actually pretty close to what we actually have in the beta and in the release candidate builds. And so the interesting thing is that these types of prototypes that we use late in the cycle are very interesting because you send them out to the team, developers, testers, program managers, and so on and so forth, and all of a sudden everybody is a designer, right? All you need to do is simply plug in some numbers, and the great thing is everybody can just plug in their numbers, everybody on the team, and share their favorite numbers. And importantly, also try to come up with a rationale of why they prefer these numbers. And all of a sudden, you get a very inclusive discussion about visuals and animation. You know, these things might be design-driven, but all of the disciplines are actually contributing into this discussion, and we're all designing this thing together, right? Because all you need to do is, the only skill you need is really typing those numbers and sort of thinking about why you like certain things. So really, this type of prototype, it just fosters collaboration in a great way. Now, when we talk about, you know, we were pretty happy with all these light effects, and the fact, you know, this idea that the desktop should be about you and not about us, and it should be a very personal experience. And of course, when you start to think about personalization in the desktop area, the wallpapers on the mind, right? Small piece of the product, but still pretty important. So what we decided to do is bring some of those themes around light into our wallpapers that we were going to design for Windows 7 as well. And that's what we did. And we sort of stuck with, and you may have seen some of these out there on the internet already. You know, we've kind of stuck with the traditional themes. So we've got some close-up photography, and you can clearly see the, you know, the theme of light reflected here. We've got, you know, some landscapes, you know, pretty traditional stuff. Got some light there as well. Architecture, again, got some light. And what we wanted to do in Windows 7 is actually go beyond some of that traditional stuff. And we wanted to go a little bit edgier and a little bit more interesting. So we decided to actually work with a whole bunch of artists that do illustration, and it allowed us to explore this much broader set of visual styles and allow many more styles so that everybody can actually pick a wallpaper that they like, that they love. The chances are much higher than you're going to find one that you love. Also, but by the way, it means that there are going to be some that you will hate, and that's fine, you know, as long as there are some that you will love as well. So we worked with a lot of artists, illustrators, and we gave them a design group. We said, you know, we're interested in these wallpapers, we're interested in this idea of light, and we wanted the desktop to sort of feel open, atmospheric, fun, colorful. So we gave them all these words, put in a design group. But we also, of course, wanted to have the style of that particular artist represented as well. So we got some really cool wallpapers. You know, this is an example here. Very different one here, you know, all these different styles from all these different artists. And, you know, we never knew really what we got back, you know, when we get back. What we wanted is really have our themes reflected, but also the styles of all these different artists. And each artist interpreted light and energy and colorful and so on and so forth in a very different way, right? So here you can see this artist clearly has some light effects at the top, right? The theme of light is there. But then there's some crazy stuff as well. There's a little worm thing in the middle. There's rice cookers. You know, all that crazy stuff. Some artists would give us monkeys climbing up trees. We got bears. We got mice. You know, some pretty cool stuff. I mean, we never really knew what we were going to get. You know, the art director is pretty heavy. But again, the style of the artist was important. You know, so we might get sort of these porcelain dolls. You know, so just some really cool wallpapers that we think, you know, it's a very small part of the product, but one that we're pretty proud of. And so I think we'll be able to find some really pretty cool wallpapers in Windows 7 that you might like quite a bit. So what's the lesson that we learned of this this little bit? All the stuff I just showed you is all about small stuff. It's all about, none of this is going to help you do a function that you couldn't do before. It's not going to make your work faster. It's not going to make you have better task completion. It's not going to do any of that. But what it is going to do is maybe make you feel a little bit better when you use the product, right? And that's important. So we think that technology is sort of maturing. It's at a point of maturity that task completion, efficiency, the traditional usability metrics, those are maybe not enough by themselves. We need to invest in some of the small details, some of that polish, some of the stuff that people have come to expect of technology products. And we realize that we need to get the basics right first. But once we get the basics right, and we spend a lot of time on the basics and the functionality, like I showed you. But once we do that, we need to go beyond that and really address the small details in this little piece of polish. So we looked at bat signal, we looked at the nug, our jump list, and we just looked at color hot track. Let's look at our last case study, and this one is called Arrow Shake. Now throughout Windows 7, for some reason, we were sort of obsessed with this idea of allowing you to peek at a window. So allowing you to get a full-size preview of a window without actually switching to it. And the reason why we're obsessed with that idea is because we were thinking, what if, say for instance, you need to glance at a window to see a phone number or read a bit of text? Wouldn't it be great if you could just glance at it and we don't force you to switch to it, so then you have to find your other window back? It just might save you a lot of work if you could just glance at it. And our first try at this sort of peek and glance scenario, we called Aladdin. And this prototype is from February 2007. Let me show it to you now. Let me open up some windows here. We've got some text right here. And maybe put this window here. And I'm going to open up the Aladdin prototype. As you can see, it's a real code prototype running, actually. It runs on Vista and Windows 7. And the idea of Aladdin was, you know, say, imagine this situation here. I'm working on this particular window, but I just want to glance at this window with text that you sort of see off and to the right. Now, the way that worked in the Aladdin world is I would go to that window and I would start to rub. And the window would sort of float to the front, right? I'm rubbing it, just like Aladdin. And the thing is, the way it works actually in this prototype, I need to keep rubbing for it to be the front. So it sort of stops or goes back. So if I want to read quite a bit, I'm going to rub, read, rub, read, rub, rub, read, and it becomes sort of a hassle, right? So we realize this wasn't really a very good idea. You know, you might as well just switch to the window. Why would you just keep rubbing and rubbing and rubbing? It's sort of fun, but it just quickly loses its appeal. I'm closing the letter prototype here. So, but for some reason, we were pretty, this gesture of the rubbing sort of stuck with us. And we ended up using it for a completely different scenario. So we ended up using it for the arrow shake scenario, which is, of course, the scenario I showed you. When you're shaking the window, all of the other windows minimize and you're clearing the clutter. So completely different scenario, but in a weird way, this aligning, you know, one thing to the next thing, the surface itself into arrow shake. And so we built arrow shake, in an early prototype, and we put that in usability as well. And this is what we got.
That's kind of cool. I like that. Was here when I decide I'm interested in this window.
Okay. Oh, wow. Oh, I like that. That was really cool. You decide you want this window?
Let's
shake it again.
Get on down.
I'll come back.
That's 10 there now. Come on, I like that. I like that. Good job, y'all. All right. Yeah.
Now, completely, of course, I completely cherry picked these usability videos, right? I didn't show you guys 100 people that come into our labs every day and tell us, oh my god, you guys suck. But still, you know, we were pretty happy to see some of the people really like that feature. Just to give you a little bit more context as well. For the entire Windows 7 project, we actually had about 5,000 people come in for usability for a total of 20,000 hours of usability data that we collected. So how does the story end? Well, we don't know yet. We released the Windows 7 beta at the beginning of this year, release candidate earlier this month, and but we haven't really exposed Windows 7 to the broad product, to the broad user base yet. But what we do have is you know, some reviews have been written, some blog posts have been written, and it's kind of interesting to compare those reviews and blog posts against our goals to see if we actually met some of the goals that we were trying to, that we set out and tried to achieve. So again, these are our desktop experience goals. So how did we do? Let's look at some quotes. Things you use all the time are at your fingertips, on the edge roads. The application jump lists make it much easier and faster to navigate Windows 7 and work with files. Well, that's exactly what we wanted. Manage your windows with confidence. One of the major issues I always had was finding a specific window if many were open. With the help of the new taskbar, that issue has been eliminated. Well, great. You are in control. Windows 7 is the first version of Windows I can recall in which a meaningful percentage of the changes involved getting out of the user's face. Again, we want it to be about you, not about us, so we're really happy to read this. Clean alignment. Windows 7 just plain works. It works fast and is a complete pleasure to use. It is super clean. Well, those are some, you know, some good indicators that, we may be on path to actually achieve some of those goals that we set out to try to achieve for Windows 7. So I hope you enjoyed the whole story of how we went from Windows Vista to Windows 7 and hearing about some of our challenges, seeing some of our sketches or prototypes, hearing about some of the solutions that we came up with, but most importantly, learning about the lessons that we learned in this process. We talked about agreeing on goals and principles for great collaboration in a multidisciplinary team. We talked about starting small and not trying to solve all of the problems that your product might have at once. Prototyping early, real code, gave us some really interesting insights by giving us first-hand experience with some of our designs. Trying stuff out in longitudinal usability, if you have the time for it, you can get some very deep insights. Iteration, we didn't get anything right the first time, you know? We didn't even expect anything to be right the first time. We really planned for iteration in our design process. And then the small details. You know, technology is at the point where we need to really plan for the small details and users have come to expect it. So with that, that's all I have. It's been an honor to represent the Windows Design. team here that designed Windows 7. And I really hope you have a great rest of the mix. And thank you all for coming.